This is the John Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya. Hi, Monica.
Hey, Jessica.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, I'm doing well this morning. I got an ego boost because I went to Target and an employee asked me on a date.
Oh my God, wait.
I feel great about myself
today. Tell us the story.
His name is Ian. Shout out Ian at Target. I won't say his name. Or I mean, I did just
I was going to say, you just said his fucking name.
I won't say the location of the Target. You know.
It was in Los Angeles.
To keep some anonymity. But even though I'm a woman in a relationship, you know, sometimes it feels nice to be asked out by a very attractive person. Mm-hmm. It is a big ego boost. He didn't do it creepily. He was super nice and he's very attractive. So I was like, hell yeah, dude. But also I've got a boyfriend who I love. So goodbye. But also you're cute.
Hello. Goodbye, but also hola.
And when I told him, he was like, please tell me you don't have a boyfriend. And I was like, I do have a boyfriend. He was like, why? Which made me laugh a lot. So
what a man.
I know. Shout out Ian.
I know. I was going to say, I'm going to be on Ian Watch 2020, making sure that I check in with him every now and again. Let him know the, you know, ins and outs of your relationship to see where he can fit in there. You know what I mean? Maybe you have room in your heart for a throuple.
Oh my God.
You know, you never know.
Sean.
If you're listening.
If you're listening.
Are you down for throuple?
Oh my God. How are you, Monica?
I am swell. I'm swell. I've got a bird in the fridge.
She's got a bird in the fridge.
Got a bird in the fridge.
And by a bird in the fridge, she's a chicken that is sitting in salt.
She's brining. Actually, he. He feels more like a he.
What's his name?
Waldo.
Okay.
Yeah. I couldn't think of anything more original, so I thought of the last thing I thought of, which is the Where's Waldo franchise.
Okay. The franchise?
I think it is a franchise, is it not?
Okay, I guess.
They have books, have movies, TV they have movies? Shows. They do. The Where's Waldo animated film.
I didn't know that.
I might be lying. Yes. The Where's Waldo franchise. You know. They might be doing a movie about him.
Who knows?
They did that one sketch about him. I don't know. It's a fucking empire. Get on the fucking train.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Anyway, my bird's sitting in herbs, in salt.
In herbs.
In herbs. In salt. And I'm going to make it. Roast it. I'm gonna roast it. He's been sitting in there for like a million years.
Is it a spatchcocked chicken?
It is a spatchcocked chicken.
I've never spatchcocked a chicken.
I pulled his spine out of his body and put it in the freezer.
See, I've never spatchcocked a chicken. I have roasted one, but I've never.
I'm
gonna say it again for you. Spatchcocked.
Spatchcocked. I always spatchcock my chickens. I always spatchcock. You know, if I get the need, I spatchcock the bird. It's the only way.
There are just days where I could really go for a good spatchcock.
I agree. Honestly, it's the best way. You cut it in. So the way that you spatchcock a chicken, which is in my opinion the only way to like thoroughly roast a bird.
Sure.
To where the meat is all evenly cooked and it's juicy and tender.
Sometimes
and then,
the bottom gets a little rubbery if you don't.
Yeah, it's fine. The point that I'm trying to make is the way to spatchcock a chicken is you essentially take like kitchen shears and cut up along the sides of the spine.
Yeah.
And then rip the spine out.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking gross.
Open up the chicken as far as it goes. Clip the breastbone, so like the sternum.
Monica's on a smacking human. Her sternum.
you clip it, like you make a little incision, and then it cracks open. And then you flip the fucker on his what used to be his belly.
Yeah.
What used to be his back. My anatomy's fucked up. I would have flunked out of medical school. And then you leave him like breast side up.
Yeah.
And then he lies flat.
And he browns and gets all crisp.
And he gets super crisp, especially when you leave it overnight in a salt bath.
Yeah.
It sucks.
A lot of the moisture
with
out.
With 7 C's, all of the moisture out of the skin. so that when you plop them in the oven to roast, it takes less time to cook, and the skin crisps up like delicious skin on a chicken.
You sound like Julia Child, but like whispering.
Butter.
The first time I ever roasted a chicken, so usually they have like the gizzards taken out of them. Usually.
I get all my chickies with the gizzards in a baggie.
I usually don't. Or they're at least in a baggie inside of the chicken. The very first time I went to roast a chicken, I went to turn it upside down so that I could season the bottom of it, and all of the organs just poured.
Jessica!
And I nearly vomited.
Oh my goodness.
And in that moment, I was like, do I even want to eat this chicken? Because I have very weird associations with food. Like if the preparation grosses me out, I don't want to eat it later. It's just how my mind works.
I get that.
And so I was like, I don't know if I can do this, but I did it. I roasted the chicken. I ate it. It was fucking delicious. But so gnarly.
My relationship with chicken is very weird.
I know. We've talked about it on, I think it was the Jeff Goldblum episode.
Yeah. Sometimes I just won't eat it.
Yeah.
Because it freaks me out.
I get like that with deli meat.
No. Like I don't eat any red meat. Like no pork. I don't know if pork's even considered red meat. I don't care.
I don't know either.
If it's not chicken or fish, I won't eat it. Period. Like end of discussion.
Yeah.
A lot of it comes from the fact that I respect the shit out of pigs. They have the emotional, like, intelligence of a 3-year-old human. I think that they're great. Mm-hmm. Also, cow meat makes me vomit. So I don't eat it for that reason. And then, like, all other red meat really upsets my tummy for some reason. Chicken sometimes upsets my tummy. Most of the time, it just freaks me out. Mm-hmm. Like the texture of it freaks me out. But when I roast a chicken, all is well. And I guess I can also deal with it raw. I guess. Because I just ripped its spine out of its body
and stuck it
in my freezer so that I can make stock. Anyway, now that we've grossed out all of our vegan listeners, I'm so sorry. Today we're talking about, honestly, one of the greatest men to ever walk this planet.
Yeah, some of you might hear his name and go, is he a daddy? To which I say, fuck yes.
Yes, he is.
Maybe isn't entirely what we have previously defined a daddy as, but I will still say that he's a daddy.
We are champions of this man in a way that I think is not commonly accepted. Sure. I think that he has been given so many fine films. Not great.
Fine.
Fine. Mm-hmm. And I think he deserves more, which is part of the reason why we're doing this episode dedicated to him, because we recognize his potential, mm-hmm, and he needs to be in more shit.
Agreed.
And who is this man, Jessica?
This man is Brendan Fraser.
Wow.
I love him. I've always loved him. There was a period of time where I was like, where is Brendan Fraser? Like, what is he doing?
What happened to him?
And everyone also felt that way, because when he started popping up in TV, they were like, oh, Brendan Fraser's back. Like, what the fuck was he doing? And then he got a lot of shit for like gaining weight and like being out of the public eye. And he kind of became like a Hollywood joke in a way. And then people realized like exactly what he was going through the entire time. And now I think there is at least a really big corner of the internet. I don't know if it's like a corner of society in general, mm-hmm, but like who have realized like, oh, this man has been through the fucking ringer.
A lot.
We owe him an apology, and let's appreciate his work.
Precisely.
And let's root for him to now have an actual comeback.
Yes.
So that's why we're doing this. Because we love him. We even love some of the quote unquote worst movies that he's done. Some are legit bad, but yes, like,
but some of them are admirable.
Yeah, exactly.
They're fine. Another thing, disclaimer, in us going through his past a little bit, there will be some stuff that will come up that if you feel a little bit weird about, such as like any topics of like sexual assault or depression, mm-hmm. you know where to go, which is not here. But yeah, Jessica, why don't you give us a little intro on the man, the myth, the legend, the comeback king.
A forgotten daddy, some may say.
They do say.
Brendan Fraser was born in Indianapolis and came to Hollywood to work in film after college. After one small role in Dogfight as his feature film debut, he quickly got his first leading role in Encino Man in 1992 and starred that same year in School Ties. So, guys, he got a huge starring role in his third movie ever, which is fucking insane, which launched his career. He's a bit of a showbiz everyman, playing dramatic and comedic roles, starring in the Mummy action franchise, performing in shows on the West End and Broadway, and making TV appearances as well. Fraser has kept a low profile for about the last 10 years, taking time away to treat his physical injuries sustained while filming the Mummy films and the depression he experienced after his incredibly expensive divorce and his speaking out about his sexual assault that happened in 2003. He has recently had a string of successful TV performances, leading many to think he's making a comeback, which they call a renaissance, which I'm very fond of. We certainly think this is the case. He is the literal daddy to three sons and a horse named Pickass, which he rescued. I say rescued, but he was like, you know, a film horse, but he adopted him off of a film set, right, which right. I think is kind of funny.
Pickass. We stand Pickass.
Hell yeah. I would want to be Brendan Fraser's horse. That yeah. sounds weird, but oh, like... If I was going to be a horse, that's the one I'd be.
I mean, so let's just talk about sort of his, before we sort of get into his films, let's talk about his journey.
Yeah.
Right. So this man has been through, as we mentioned earlier, a fuck ton. In a very recent GQ magazine interview, although I don't really know how recent.
I think it was like 2018.
Yeah. He just sort of like spills his guts out. In the sense of like oversharing, but like respectfully oversharing, right? So he tells us all the reasons why he was gone for like a fucking decade.
Yeah.
We have not seen this man for a fucking decade.
And or all like of
a
sudden, what we've seen him in is just like
kind of nothing.
Yeah.
And now he's back. He's back in Dune Patrol.
He was nominated for like, I think, an Emmy for his supporting role in The Affair.
Right.
A few years ago.
And he's back. He's like slowly making a resurgence. He's slowly what I like to call like building himself up like brick by brick. Very slowly.
Yeah.
Very
I smell carefully. Like a legit comeback from him.
Precisely. And I think a lot of what we have to talk about is the fact that like the reason why we're doing this episode, besides the fact that we want you guys to know that he is a great man and that he's a talented man and that he deserves a second glance from you and a second piece of your attention, is a few weeks ago, I would say, I dare say a month ago, Jessica messaged me a Tumblr thread.
Yeah, it's a Tumblr thread.
And what was in the Tumblr thread, Jessica?
I forget like what exactly it says. I could probably find it if I pulled it up now, but it's basically like a paparazzi shot of Brendan Fraser walking and like he doesn't look his best, and someone commented on it basically be like, how did this, and they show like a younger hot photo of him
like ripped.
Like go to this, like how fucking gross, how times have changed, and people are like, do you even know what this man has been through? And then the whole thread is people like, do not come for Brendan Fraser, he's been through so fucking much. He got like crazy injuries on the Mummy. He's had like multiple surgeries. I think like 7 different surgeries.
It wrecked his body.
He like destroyed his vocal cords. He injured his knees. He had like chronic back injuries because of it. Like it was fucking insane. He got sexually assaulted in 2003 at like a Hollywood Foreign Press brunch thing and didn't speak out about it. And then when he did speak out about it in 2018, got a lot of shit from people because, I mean, sexual assault is, as a topic, gets a lot of shit when people speak out. But because he's a man, especially, he got all of this backlash. He was him and his wife got a divorce. She came for alimony of $900,000
a year.
A year. Which is insane. And he was like, I simply cannot pay this. And then she accused him of hiding assets. It was a whole fucking thing. He has an autistic son, which is obviously something that takes an immense emotional
toll. It is, in the most respectful way possible, it is a challenge.
Oh, absolutely.
To be the parent mm-hmm. of any child with any sort of disability, with any sort of, you know, learning disorder, with any sort of mental disorder, with anything.
It's a challenge to be a parent.
Period. And so then on top of that, you put a child with special needs, a child with who needs special attention, special skills, like a totally new skill set from you that you may or may not have.
And while you're going through the most expensive divorce ever.
So yeah, so in the most respectful way possible, having a child that you have to shift your mindset, shift your skill set in order to care for properly, right? Because you could take care of a child with special needs in a quote unquote normal way or neurotypical way, right? And that would not service the child in the proper way.
No.
It would not nourish the child in the proper way. So massive kudos to Brendan.
Big shout out to Brendan. So all of these things happened. And then, you know, he's also aging. He's
getting older.
He's not looking the way that he looked in The Mummy, which is not nobody. It's not a fault. But people seem to, it's almost like people blame actors specifically or anyone in the public eye for like aging
or for like quote unquote letting themselves go.
Exactly.
Like, first of all, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
your body is going to look different the older you get. Your metabolism slows down. Sometimes you don't have the literal time, energy, effort, and even if you do, your body's just not going to look the same way.
Well, also, even if that was a choice, nobody should fault anybody for their appearance.
Not at all.
At all.
Never.
That's simply not something that happened. And on top of it, these photos that people were bringing up to be like, oh my God, he's let himself go, are fucking paparazzi photos.
Which he never look good.
He didn't pose for them. They weren't lit properly. Like, it's so fucking unfair, the mud that people have been dragging Brendan Fraser through. And we are just like, not here for it. So that's what this whole Tumblr thread was about, which then spurred us to revisit the GQ article that I had read it once before, but I had forgotten about it.
Right.
And then to be like, oh, we need to do an episode on him.
Absolutely. So for those of you who sort of like want to know, to read this article, I think we can like link it in the, just like the link in our bio and also just sort of like put it in the show notes. But it's called, it has a very fitting title, Whatever Happened to Brendan Fraser. It's available on GQ.com. And it's an article by Zach Barron, and it came out in February of 2018. And I think a very well-written, very compassionate article that gives Brendan a platform to voice the insecurities, the issues, the problems that have sort of like overshadowed his career.
Yeah.
And vomit them all out in a very respectful way. Yeah. I think that if you have the time and you have the desire to read this article, I think you really should. Simply because it gives you an insight on his life, B, his career, and C, his trajectory.
Yeah.
Where he's going after this, like the hope that the man has for the future that he sees in his children, that he sees in his horse, that he sees in himself, where he's like slowly starting to build himself back up.
Yeah.
And create a life that surrounds him that makes him feel good.
Yeah.
I think he is a good representation of what happens to a lot of actors when you neglect them, when you don't let them speak about what's happened to them, when you don't give them the support that they need in order to survive. I'm sure the makers of The Mummy were like, great, we don't have to hire a stuntman. Like, he can do it. Who gives a fuck about his safety? Who cares about the fact that he'll have chronic pain in the future? I certainly don't care. So I think he's a good representation of like how you should not treat performers, how you should not treat actors, how you should not ignore actors, and how you just straight up, like, you just need to give actors more support, period. And I think that he represents that.
And also, like, give a shit about who they actually are behind the scenes, because I feel like he's one of those actors who nobody ever gave a shit who Brendan Fraser actually was.
No.
They were just like, oh, he's the guy from The Mummy. Or, like, he's that guy from George of the Jungle who's, like, very wide-eyed and naive. Mm-hmm. But they weren't like, who is he actually as a human being, and what is he going through?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of the times on this podcast, we objectify the people on it. It's simply because they are some of the most attractive people that we've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely.
And we sort of come at it from a from an unassuming place of not being creepy white men. Sort of like praising these people for their talent, their stardom, their ability to sort of like chameleon themselves into these incredible roles, and then giving us the satisfaction of also being gorgeous.
Or like, how all of those things contribute to an element of attraction.
Precisely. Yeah. And to us, as much as a lot of people don't think so, we think that Brendan Fraser is absolutely stunning in the sense that, like, he's been through so much. And on top of it, like, he's still standing. He's still making stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He is still pursuing his passion.
Yeah.
Despite his passion taking a fat dump on him.
Yeah, despite Hollywood literally raising the finger to him.
Precisely. So that is an attractive quality. We love that about him. And we also just want everyone to know, like, these people have other things going on, right? And when you see a film, when you go to the movies and you remember that, I think that sort of adds another level of dimension to you enjoying a film that an actor has produced.
Yeah.
And that an actor has performed in. So there's that for ya.
Yeah. So now,
first,
let's get into his films.
Film. The first film is School Ties. Came out in 1992, directed by Robert Mandel, written by Dick Wolf and Law and Order New York's Dick Wolf and Daryl Ponison. When David Green, played by Brendan Fraser, receives a football scholarship to a prestigious prep school in the 1950s, he feels pressured to hide the fact that he's Jewish from his classmates and teachers, fearing their anti-Semitism. He quickly becomes popular on campus, but when his friend Charlie Dillon, played by Matt Damon, a very young Matt Damon.
Oh my god, he looks like a tiny baby.
He looks like he's 4 years old. finds out and reveals that David is Jewish, his life at school is suddenly at stake.
So this movie, if you watch it, is incredibly reminiscent of
Dead Poets Society.
It even has the same composer.
I will say, this was my first time ever watching this film. Jessica had watched this one before. I watched it and I immediately thought, this reminds me a lot of Dead Poets Society, simply because it, like, feels the same, right?
Yeah.
The only, like, difference
prep
is the
school, New England,
all boys,
all being like, kind of like
trying to find their way.
Yeah.
That's
what I was going to say, being inspired, but that's not that's what not happens it. In School Ties.
And the only difference being there is no, like, adult advocating for them, which I found very interesting. The time period sort of lends itself to that, though.
Yeah.
A lot of people thought, like, high school boys were, like, men, essentially, and they were like, you deal with it yourselves. Like, there's not a
especially, like, rich prep school boys.
Oh, precisely. Like, there's a scene where, like, Matt Damon's character, who looks 3 years old, walks up to the bar at, like, the alumni function and is like, give me a fucking scotch and soda. Like, he's a child. I'm so confused. But that's what I mean in the sense of, like, these boys are treated like men, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, Brendan Fraser's character is Jewish.
Yes.
He comes from, I think, Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, yeah.
Which, shout out The Office. And he comes from, like, a shit part of town. He, like, has, like,
He gets in a fight.
Like, I guess the whole main thing about his character is he's, like, an angry kid. Like, he's just angry. And he's very physical. Which, Brendan Fraser plays very well. I can totally believe him reaching across the table and grabbing a little boy by his neck and smacking it onto the table. But he's just a very like angry Jewish boy who's like ambition is to get into Harvard, basically. Like that's his whole MO. He's like, I'm accepting this recruitment into this school to play football simply based on the reasoning that they will get me into Harvard even after just this 1 year.
Yeah.
Period. That's what he believes. And so that's why he ends up in this school, even though he is being told by everyone around him to hide his identity in order to not get fucked up, basically.
Well, because as soon as he arrives and meets his roommate and his roommate's friends, so his roommate is played by Chris O'Donnell. There are a lot of daddies in this movie. Specifically baby daddies.
Yeah, baby daddies.
So there's Chris O'Donnell, there's Matt Damon, Ben Affleck is in this, Anthony Rapp is in this. There's a lot of people you have seen before. As soon as he meets all of them, they immediately make Jewish jokes.
Like not Jewish jokes, but specifically like anti-Semitic jokes.
Yes, like very, very bad Jewish jokes.
Terrible. Not Jewish jokes in the sense of like a rabbi walks into a bar. Not the Jewish joke that jokes that like your Jewish uncle tells you at like the the Jewish function, right? Like not those jokes. Like anti-Semitic.
We both say as not Jewish people. I know. But yeah, like legit anti-Semitic jokes. So he's super aware that he needs to hide this element of himself. They make it very clear that like it's not an option. It was interesting when I was like looking up synopses of the movie to put in our notes, like a lot of them refer to like he has to decide whether he's going to reveal it or not. I was like, it's not a choice.
No,
like he's not going to say this because at the time, like the rhetoric was just like Jews are bad.
Yes.
And that's it. And I think that translated into his acting, where I think he made a very smart and interesting decision, because I think normally in a movie like this, it would just be like, oh, he's like bummed that this is
sad
happening,
boy hours,
but he'll assimilate and be fine. Like almost like he's on board with hiding it. Like he's shameful about it. Brendan Fraser doesn't have any shame. David Green doesn't have any shame about his Judaism. So therefore he has a lot of anger about this fact of his life.
Yeah. And you know what? That you make a very interesting point, because I, up until this very fucking moment, I could not sort of articulate how I felt about the way he handled the news about his religion, because you know what, throughout the film no one asks him what his religion is.
No.
And he makes a point when it is revealed to cause malice, by the way. Yeah. Just an FYI. This wasn't an accident.
Yeah, Matt Damon like let the cat out of the bag on purpose to get back at him, because Brendan Fraser was like a better football player and stole his girlfriend.
He was Miss Cecilia Girl very quickly.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, she was a bitch. She ended up being a bitch anyway. So
yeah, Sally. God damn it.
But anyway, Brendan's character, his name is David. David Green. They should have known. Anyway. He has this like underlying bubbling anger always, even when he's thrilled, even when he's happy, there's constant like in the chest. I literally do not know how Brendan Fraser does it, but he is somehow, with this like God-given talent, somehow able to translate that through the camera and onto my screen to my eyes and my soul, and is like, I'm an angry boy, even when I'm smiling, which is so confusing to me. I do not know how he does that.
It's like almost like you never ever see his character like take a deep breath.
Never. Not once.
You always feel that tension, even when he does make friends, even when he is having a good time. He still knows that he cannot be his full self, even though his self is not created by the fact that he is Jewish, but it is he's keeping a giant secret that he knows that if his quote unquote friends were to find out, it would change the fucking game. And it does. It puts everything at stake for him. So he knows how huge it is. And so he therefore has to hide it. and you see all of this anger within him. And I think that was such an intelligent acting choice, instead of just like sadness or complacency.
Right.
Because it made it so much more interesting. And it also made you understand like what was at stake.
Yeah, it made the stakes fucking skyrocket just from his performance alone. The writing is good. The directing is good, but from his performance alone, he established the stakes.
Yeah.
The writing was like, well, don't show your fucking cards, right? So like, it was his performance that made you believe everything, like the world was going to blow up.
Yeah.
Like literally blow up if something happened and this were to slip out. So the point that I was trying to make was no one ever asks him if he's Jewish.
Yeah.
Which he makes the point, you know, he makes this point when he's like talking to his roommate. His roommate's like really angry about the fact that he never told him he was Jewish. Yada, yada, yada. He said it would have made a difference, even though we all know as the audience, it fucking wouldn't have. He's an anti-Semitic asshole. They all are anti-Semitic assholes. They're like all in a Catholic preparatory school. It's very religious, very like boys club, New England, rah, rah sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he like tells him, he's like, well, I've never asked you what your religion is. Like, what are you? And he's like, I'm a Mennonite. And he's like, wow.
He says Methodist.
Or Mennonite.
Mennonites are like Amish.
I know. I was going to say, he's like, I'm a Methodist. And Brendan Fraser is like, well, David Green is like, okay, well, that changes nothing. Okay. And he's like, well, but that's different. Like, Jews are different. And he's like, okay, cool. That's great. And he's just like he just gets very angry about it. But like, sort of to, you know, what lends itself to that is like, the second that it is revealed, he tells everyone like, I never kept this from you. No one ever asked me. And I, as the audience member, fully believed that if someone were to look him, David Green, in the face and ask, are you Jewish or what is your religion? He would have proudly said,
I'm Jewish.
Yep. And that is like a mind-blowing performance on Brendan Fraser's part, because you're like, how do you get that from an actor? How do you get the fact that if you know deep in your soul that if one of the boys would have asked him, are you Jewish, he would have not only said that he was Jewish, but like proudly and methodically said, I am Jewish, 100%. That's what I am.
Yeah.
But no one asked him. And I think that was sort of the fine line in the film, was because no one asked him, he simply just omitted the information. Like, he did not give anyone that information. Yeah. He didn't lie. He didn't cover some truth. Mm-hmm. He just didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Period. The only reason it slipped out was because in that same scene that we talked about earlier, when Matt Damon's character, whose name is like Charles Dillon, walks up to the bar and is like, give me a fucking scotch and soda, being the 4-year-old that he is, because he's angry that his girlfriend got stolen by David.
It wasn't even his girlfriend. It was just like a childhood friend of his that he had like claimed. And eventually she's just like, why? Stop. I'm not your girlfriend. I like David. And then he got pissed.
He got pissed as fuck. So he went to the bar to order a scotch and soda. And he just like, he's talking to the other alumni, because it's an alumni event, because it's fucking New England and it's a fucking Catholic preparatory school. And they are talking about like the other school, and like they had just won a football game.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about like how the other school, they would have won had they like had a different quarterback or something along the lines of like, oh, if they had Green there, David Green. Oh, yeah, they totally would have been this, because, like, David Green was the star player and the whole reason why they won the game.
Yeah.
And one of the men comments, like, well, they would have never let him in.
Yeah.
And Charles Dillon, played by Matt Damon, was like, well, fucking why wouldn't they let him in?
Yeah.
And he was like, because he's a Jew. Like, that was the big reveal, right? Very subtle reveal. And you could sort of see the tension and, like, the malice start to build in Matt Damon, and then you immediately think, I don't really know how this is gonna go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, as the viewer, like I, as the movie watcher, I fundamentally, honestly, didn't know. Like, I could have been like, yeah, he's gonna get fucked up. But at the end of the day, like, he's a big boy. Like, he, you've seen at this point in the movie, how many times have you seen him like beat someone up?
multiple times. Like, multiple the first times. Scene that he is in is a fight scene.
And he like and fucks he's, like, up covered a bunch in blood. Of people.
Yeah. He arrives at his new school with a fucking shiner.
Yes. So you think to yourself, he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But it's not the beating up. Like, they don't beat him up, really. Mm-mm. Like, there's this climactic scene where they're like in the shower. It's very like masculine.
Well, I actually, this was a point that I was going to make. I think it was very, very smart of the writers to make the reveal happen in that way, because they're naked. They're their most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And a male shower is like a very masculine male bonding space.
Right.
And so to have, it makes the shift of the energy like that much more distinct.
Right.
And the physical stakes that much higher because they're literally exposed.
Oh, definitely.
And you also see a lot of really cute boy butts. You Man see butts. Brendan Fraser's bare ass mm-hmm. and Matt Damon's bare butt.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice moment.
It's a good moment all around. All around. But the point that I'm trying to make is I don't see how... Like, I guess I just love how Brendan's performance mm-hmm. lended itself to the audience not fully knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Because I would say anyone else in that role, I think I could have predicted what was going to happen. Which sure. is like, this fucker's going to get beat the fuck up.
Yeah.
he's going to get beat up. He's going to get kicked out of school. They're going to do something, some bullshit to him. Like, something's going to happen. I honestly didn't know.
Yeah.
I honestly did not know. And the fact that he still stood in his pride and was like, yes, this is it. Instead of like, what are you talking about? I'm not a fucking Jew. I hate Jews. Like, he really could have done that.
Yeah.
He really could have. And he didn't. He mm-hmm. was like, no. I'm Jewish. Yes, it's okay. Beat me up. I get it. Sure, make fun of me. Sure, be prejudiced. Like, that's fine. I mean, it's not fine, but like, he was like, I'm going to be proud in who I am.
Yeah.
And my favorite line that it says in the whole movie is when he's talking to the Sally bitch, when she like gets out of the pool. Cause she's like, she's at the other, like the girl's school, which these fucking Catholic schools, like obviously separated the boys and the girls. And like in, you know, in the Valley, it would have been like Louisville and Crespi.
Oh my God.
And like, that's what it would have been. Anyway, so he's talking to Sally and he's like, why haven't you returned my calls? Obviously it's because she's an anti-Semitic bitch.
Yeah, because she finds out.
But anyway, she's like, well, you just made life really hard for me because
you lied to me.
You lied to me. And like, now all my friends are like, what's it like to kiss a Jew? And like, I have to tell them now. Like, what? And he's like, you know, tell me, like, tell me what, tell me why. Tell me why ain't nothing but a heartbreak. And she goes, well, like, you know, like, she doesn't even really say it.
Yeah.
But she makes a big point, like, you lied to me.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, bitch, I didn't lie to you.
I just didn't say anything.
I didn't say anything. I lied to my father and myself, is what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so true. And it is. In that moment, that was the only moment, by the way, in the entire film where I felt like his character like broke down a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like that moment and then the moment where it's like a little bit before Matt Damon finds out that he's Jewish. They're sitting on the dock together. It's after their friend has a suicide attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells him, you know, like, I just really want to get into Harvard. That's what this education means to me, because he's only at this school for his senior year. He Precisely. Hasn't been there since like childhood, like everyone else has. And he's like, my friends back home, like, they would never believe that like our friend tried to kill himself because of a grade. Like
right.
they wouldn't get that. Like, this is everything to me. And you guys are taking it for granted is essentially like
what he said,
what he's saying. Mm-hmm. And so there's so much at stake for him, which is why when it does come out that he is Jewish, he fucking take like, yes, he wants to beat them. He wants to fight them. He wants to fight whoever is like posting because they put a swastika in his bedroom.
Because of course they do.
So that he wants to like fight whoever did that. But the person never reveals himself. So he fucking takes the high road and he's like, I'm just going to keep my head down, do my work, study, finish, and get into Harvard because that's all I care about. And then at the end of the movie, there's that moment where Matt Damon gets expelled for cheating on an exam. And he says, like, you know, I'm going to get into Harvard, but you're still going to be a Jew. And Brendan Fraser was like, and you're still going to be a prick. He's like emphasizing that for him, it's like, it's so much more about, you know, whether it's not about whether or not he's a Jew. It's not about, you know, whether or not he's an asshole or whether or not he fought anybody. It's about he's also not taking this education for granted.
Right.
And all of these other fuckers are. Not only are they prejudiced, but they're also just like dicks who don't realize their privilege.
Precisely. I think that this movie, I cannot say that it juggles both well. I think sure. that it falters in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's not a perfect movie.
But I will say I like its effort in trying to juggle both economic mm-hmm. assholery and like ethnic assholery, like prejudice assholery. So I just think, but I don't think that it does it very well, like juggling like all the socioeconomic status stuff and like the poor stuff. I think at times it gets to be too much.
Yeah, I mean, the lines definitely do get muddled, but I think right. it adds like a little bit of richness to his character where he, you know, that not only is he keeping his head high because he's not ashamed of being Jewish, but he's keeping his head high because for him, like the stakes are so high because this is his only chance at an education like this, where for everyone else, they can fucking cheat on tests and still get into Ivy League schools.
Precisely. And it might, you know, it might truly be because he's like a white boy in an all boys school and mm-hmm. they all have like an insane amount of confidence.
Yeah.
But like, to me, if he was the poor kid and the Jewish kid, I don't know that he would be hanging with like the top dogs of the school. Yeah. I think he would literally be like staying home every night studying. I don't think that he would have like gone out with Sally. Like,
sure.
That's the only part of the movie where I'm like, as it just doesn't make any sense. Like, for example, my dad, the reason I bring this up is my dad mm-hmm. works at an all girls private school. He like manages the building. And he, the way that he like describes to me the situation that like goes on there is like, obviously the majority of the girls there are extremely affluent mm-hmm. because the tuition there is like the price of a small elephant per year. Uh-huh. And to me, just coming from like a realistic perspective, I don't see how he would have because he really did assimilate very well.
Yeah.
Whether or not he liked it, right? So like the anger was still there. I don't see how he would have like hung out with those guys and had that respect mm-hmm. and all of that because their behavior doesn't reflect that way. The group of boys, I don't know that they would have let in like a poor kid into their circle in that way.
I think to an extent they like didn't have that much of a choice because Chris O'Donnell was his roommate. Chris O'Donnell hangs out with all of these other kids, so they're gonna be in the room no matter what.
Right.
He's also on the football team and he's the star quarterback.
Right.
So there is an element of like them being forced together. Mm-hmm. And also you never get the sense that like they really like love him.
Right.
So I for me, it's a little bit more believable because you still sense tension regardless. Like he's not super mm-hmm. close with anybody. And even when I read the synopsis and I said his friend, Charlie Dillon, they're not really friends. They like speak cordially at times and they like hang out, but there's always tension. So I guess it makes a little bit more sense to me in that sense. But I do get where you're coming from.
Right. So, but yeah, no, I think that all in all, Brendan's performance in this film is like top notch, leading man material.
Yeah.
100%. I think if you were to take like this acting talent and put it in a today film, for mm-hmm. example, like an Oscar contender film, I totally see him fucking nailing it out of the park with something like this.
Yeah.
Like it's, I did not expect to love this film, mostly because I watched it after Blast from the Past, and that movie is delightful. But I love this movie not because of the movie.
Yeah.
But because of Brendan's performance in it.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now we move on to, you all know it, most of you love it, we feel questionably about it.
I was going to say.
The Mummy, made in 1999, directed by Stephen Sommers. Written by Stephen Sommers, Kevin Jarre, and Lloyd Fonvier. I don't actually know if that's how you say his last name, but I couldn't find any information, and that's how it's spelled.
Amen.
A little synopsis. When her brother discovers a map and key to an ancient Egyptian city, librarian Evelyn Carnahan, played by Rachel Weisz,
Evelyn the librarian,
enlists the help of explorer Rick O'Connell, played by Brendan Fraser, to help her and her brother find the lost city of Hamunaptra. But when they reach the city, they accidentally awaken the mummy of Imhotep and unleash an ancient curse placed upon him, leaving the explorers to fight for their lives and break the curse.
Full disclosure. This bitch speaking.
Yeah.
Did not watch the film before going on the ride, The Mummies, like The Revenge of the Mummy or whatever, which is based on the sequel to this film.
Yeah, The Mummy Returns.
The Mummy Returns, or The Return of the Mummy, or something about The Mummy. The Mummy comes back, guys, and it becomes a fucking trilogy for no reason.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that it made a fuck ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for Universal.
Fine.
Fine. When I tell you that the ride gave me zero joy, I just, first of all, for those of you who live in California, Southern California, any California, you've probably been to Universal Studios Hollywood, which is...
Or Universal City Walk, even?
Even. Which is, and I quote, by everyone... The worst theme park in California.
Yeah, it's not good.
We have Legoland. We have Disneyland.
Knott's Berry Farm is better than Universal City.
We have Knott's Berry Farm. We have in October, Knott's Scary Farm.
Six Flags.
We have Six Flags Magic Mountain.
Magic Mountain.
And we have at the top of a hill in Universal City, Universal Studios Hollywood. When I tell you that there are three rides, that's not me being like...
I mean, there are more than three rides.
There's three rides. There's Jurassic Park, which is now, I guess, Jurassic World, the ride.
Yeah.
Because money.
They took every good ride and fucked it up, is what they did.
There's the Simpsons ride, the artist formerly known as the Back to the Future ride, which was the artist formerly known as the E.T. ride.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the other one.
Okay, but you know...
The Mummy Returns.
What they do have, Monica, is Shrek the 4D experience.
That's not a ride. That's a 4D experience.
Okay, if you've never been to Universal Studios Hollywood, if you don't like 3D things...
Don't go!
Personally, I don't.
Everything is 3D.
I'm not exaggerating. Every ride has a 3D element.
Every single...
It is so...
Actually, not Jurassic... Actually, I don't know.
I think now they do. I think now there is a 3D element.
Fuck me and call me Sally. Yeah, they fucking have that.
The only thing that doesn't is the studio tour.
No, yes, they do. Because they added the fucking King Kong bullshit.
Oh, no, you're right.
The 360 King Kong bullshit.
Part of it isn't... Part of it is not 3D. And I do like the Universal, the studio tour experience, whatever.
Right. So they have three rides and one studio tour, which some will consider a ride. I don't. I consider it to be what the fuck it's called, is a studio tour. Okay. When I say they have three rides, they have three fucking rides and a studio tour.
They have Jurassic Park. They have... the Despicable Me experience thing, which is a ride.
That's an experience.
Okay, fine. You sit in one spot, but things move a little bit. You have...
That's an experience.
You have The Mummy, which is a ride. Mm-hmm. And then there's two rides in Harry Potter Land. And
I don't count Harry Potter Land.
It's part of the theme park,
Monica.
That's
a different park.
It's the same park. It's like you saying Tomorrowland isn't part.
That's not true.
Of Disneyland.
That's like, no, no. Mm, that's like saying California Adventure isn't Disneyland, which it's not.
No, you have to have separate entry to get into California Adventure. You don't, there's no separate, it's just a different like
it's pathway. The wizarding world of Harry Potter. They call it a different planet.
It's the same theme park, Monica.
It's a different world.
Okay, well, we will never agree on this. We veered so far off course. What we're saying is...
Anyway, the point that I was trying to make is when you walk into the Mummy, all you hear as you're waiting in line for like the entire fucking time is this like oracle whispering, Imhotep, Imhotep. And you're like... At least me, who had never seen the fucking film before, I'm like, who the fuck is this Imhotep fucker? And can she find him so this can be done? Like,
and can we shut the fuck up,
and please? Can we just not haunt my dreams for one fucking day?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It is haunting, to say the least. As a child, I was incredibly afraid, because of this movie, of ancient Egypt. Because of film depictions of like how scary it was and how their spiritualism is like demonic
and scary.
And that's very unfair to them, but that is how it was depicted. And mummies are fucking creepy. And so I was very afraid of this movie, of ancient Egypt in general, and I thought I was over it until I rewatched this movie and I was like, oh no, still fucking terrifying. Like, there's a part where Imhotep, after he has been resurrected, he's completely human except for his mouth,
which is like a mummy mouth.
So he has a mummy mouth and this scary fucking voice, and his jaw stretches like 3 feet when he opens
it. Stretches to his peen.
Yeah, it stretches so much, and he just like, he's leading this huge fucking like group of minions to go fuck shit.
Wait,
up.
I'm sorry, just because we're talking about Universal, not those minions. Not those minions.
Other minions. Other people. Minions. People under Henchmen. His spell.
Lackeys, if you will.
He's leading this big group of people. There's like lots of fire, and he stretches his mouth like all the way and lets out this like shriek, and I lost it. I was like, I'm out. I'm out of this movie. I don't want to watch this anymore.
I can't do this.
But instead, let's pivot to talking specifically about Brendan, so we do have something to say about this movie that we're not terrified of.
So Brendan plays this guy named Rick.
Yeah. Rick O'Connor, right?
That's no, Rick O'Connell.
Rick O'Connell.
Rick O'Connell.
So what I'm going to say about this performance, because let's just get it out there, is an action movie. That's what this movie is. It's not supposed to be a vehicle for anybody in this film to show their acting chops.
It is not, as you say, of substance.
No, that's not what this is about. And like, to be frank, I don't have a whole lot to say about this movie in general. But when you talk about Brendan Fraser, you can't not talk about The Mummy. It was huge for him. It was fucking massive. He was in all three of them. He did his own fucking stunts for the most part.
He destroyed his fucking body for it.
Exactly.
So we might as well give like talk about it.
But considering that Brendan Fraser's current reputation is he's this wide-eyed, naive, nice guy, you turn to movies like, I mean, School Ties was the antithesis of that, but this especially is the complete opposite. Buying him as an action star is a little difficult when you just like hear it. But right. When you watch it,
you get it.
I buy it.
Yes.
He fucking owns it. He owns his masculinity. He owns his very good looks.
Yes, he does.
And he owns that he's supposed to be this like, you don't know if you're really rooting for him,
yeah.
Brutish explorer, because to be honest, I don't even root for them that much in this movie, because I'm like, if you fucking white people just left it alone.
If you guys just left this shit alone and left the Egyptians to their devices, nothing would have happened, you colonizing freaks.
Mm-hmm. So that's the whole thing. But like, I do fully buy him as an action star, and I see like why he became marketable, and I respect him for that, you know?
I also respect him for that. I think with The Mummy in general, these are my biggest problems with it. Besides the fact that it's an action film, and I'm not the biggest fan of action films besides Vin Diesel's The Pacifier. It's too long.
It's really long.
It's too long. It doesn't feel like it flies.
No, and there are a lot of like scary like shock value moments that they really go for, but you're like,
they milk it too much
time doing this. I mean, they are scary, don't get me wrong, like that part where those fucking beetles that eat everything and go under your skin are fucking terrifying.
But I just feel like we hang on that for too long. Like
that's what the whole movie is.
It's just the entire film is like, look what we can do with CGI. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Look what we can do with CGI.
And the CGI
is amazing for the time.
For the time, sure. But then there were other movies that came before that that did it better. You know, like that.
Did Jurassic Park come before that?
And like Independence Day came before it. And, you know, like,
yeah, I was going to say they have no fucking excuse.
There was an opportunity to take that budget, put it into really great like miniature work, or, you know, shorten that fucking script and take your money elsewhere. Don't have so many fucking locations that serve no purpose.
No purpose.
So
whatsoever.
They had an opportunity to make this an exciting, snappy, tight action movie, and they didn't take it. And the only thing keeping it afloat is like a very pretty Rachel Weisz, who, thank God they gave her period fucking eyebrows, or else I would have screamed.
I also would have screamed. She has interesting eyebrows. Good eyebrows.
For the time, because it's supposed to be like 1925. Mm-hmm. And then you see other movies like the Indiana Jones movies where nobody looks like it's supposed to be the time period.
No, it literally looks like the 90s, early 2000s.
Exactly.
And then also period.
And you're like, oh, it's supposed to be 1920? Joke's on me.
Guess I'm a fucking idiot. Yeah. It's fine.
So, like, the only thing keeping this afloat is, like, very, very beautiful woman and Brendan Fraser claiming his spot as an action star and taking this as an opportunity to elevate his career and to, you know, like, make fucking money.
And to use two guns in, like, every scene.
Yeah.
And to take two pistols and use them in every scene.
Yep, yep, yep. So I think it's important for his career, which is why we're talking about it. I'm not going to tell you to go watch The Mummy.
You know what? You know what's funny? I'll tell you to go watch the movie only. So go watch The Mummy just for the sole purpose of like, mm-hmm. watch it again and see if it even gives you that same like thrill that you remember it giving you. Because every person I talk to that says, The Mummy is rad, I'm like, okay, that's great. That's awesome. Watch it now and see if you can see it through the same lens.
Yeah.
I guarantee that you cannot. I guarantee that some of the nostalgia is still there and that's sort of the only thing that's like tying you back into it.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you that you're going to watch it and like see all the holes in it and then be like, oh shit. Like, it's fine.
Well, I've also talked to a lot of people who are like, the second one is better than the first one.
I also hear that. I hear that the second one is a lot more like fleshed out. Mm-hmm. Because in the first one, what is everyone's motivation, really?
Like, when I was writing the synopsis, I was like, is he an explorer?
Is he a treasure hunter? Like, what is he?
Is he just, like, a dude? Like,
well, the whole thing is like, oh, he owes this debt to Rachel Weisz's character because she saved him.
Yeah, she saved his life.
That's not technically part of his character.
No, because he was discovering the city. You see him discovering it initially. Then he gets arrested. And then cut to Rachel Weisz's storyline and her motivation. And then she rescues him.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, what was he fucking doing there in the first place?
Well, the whole thing is, I think he's like a military man. Like he's a military man fighting.
I genuinely don't know.
I don't fucking know.
Because he just looks like an explorer.
So. You know, his outfit reminds me of what's his face's outfit in the animated film Tarzan.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
You mean the villain?
The villain. What's his name?
His name, it starts with a C.
I know it starts with a C.
Clayton?
Yeah.
Clayton.
Clayton. His outfit gives me Clayton vibes.
Yeah.
The last thing that I will say about The Mummy is it is a fun film. Brendan Fraser lends a very fun, silly, great performance.
Yeah.
Period. End of discussion. If you're looking for anything beyond that, this is not the movie for you.
No.
If you're like, you'll just be disappointed. So if you simply go into the film for the silliness, for the, you know, the action scenes, and to relive your like mummy glory days, then sure, yeah, this is the movie for you.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is, the reality of the situation is I do not believe that the mummy has like held up the test of time.
I don't either.
It's super racist. It's like a really fucking racist film. The portrayal of all of the Egyptians is very racist and like very antagonizing, like, and villainizing,
and yeah,
and like the like English people, the Americans, like every, like all the white people coming in are supposed to be seen as like the heroes and like the quote unquote good guys, when in reality, like if they just left shit alone, nothing would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're colonizing pieces of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So
if you love the mummy, I'm not telling you not to like the mummy.
We're just saying, if you love the money, if you love the mummy, we get it. But we also really don't get it.
Us personally, we don't get it for our own taste.
Us, but you, the movie watchers, we understand that you like the movie. Continue liking the movie. We will not fault you for it. We don't fault anyone for liking movies unless you like the Joker.
In which case, you're wrong.
In which case, you're incorrect.
Another story for another day.
Another story for another day.
So let's
talk about Blast from the Past.
Now we're moving to Blast from the Past, our personal fave of the three.
Yes.
Monica, take it away.
Blast from the Past came out in 1999, directed by Hugh Wilson, written by Hugh Wilson and Bill Kelly. In the 1960s, an eccentric inventor played by, brilliantly by the way, Christopher fucking Walken, takes his pregnant wife, played by Sissy Spacek, into their elaborate basement bomb shelter after they believe a bomb was dropped on their home. In reality, the quote-unquote bomb was just a plane that lost control and crashed into their home. But believing they must avoid radiation poisoning, the couple and their new baby boy named Adam, more like Adam when he gets older, must stay in the shelter for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, 35 years later, Adam must venture to the surface for food and supplies for his sick father, where he is exposed to Los Angeles, literally, in the 90s, and the realization that life has been going on without them for decades. First of all, did you, the listener, listen to that fucking premise? Did you hear it? Did you understand it? Did you? Because if you did, then you are allowed to continue. If you didn't, please go back and like replay it or find a synopsis online and read it, because it is whacked. Yep. Like, it's crazy.
It's fucking nuts.
It is just bizarre. Like, the whole point of the the whole like premise of the film is they have this like underground bomb shelter because
they've been building it for years.
They've been building, and like you're supposed to just believe that they like had the money to build this.
Well, he's an. They said he was an inventor and that he was making a ton of money.
I just like, I'm so. This is such an original film.
Oh, it's incredible. Nothing is like it.
Nothing.
They build this bomb shelter that is an exact replica of their above ground home,
minus like glass.
Yeah, and like ceilings.
Yeah.
But it's an exact fucking replica, stocked for 35 fucking years. That's insane.
Yep.
That's fucking insane.
And then just stop. What will make this zanier? Let's add a baby boy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have the baby boy be born in the bomb shelter. And let's have that baby boy born in the bomb shelter be Brendan Fraser.
Brendan.
I just, you know, obviously like Brendan Fraser's ability to play like the fish out of water is impeccable. Like, he is the guy. If you're looking for that guy to play the fish out of water, play the new kid on the block, play the like
wide-eyed
childlike guy.
Yeah,
that's him. They called the right guy.
Oh yeah.
But basically, like, his character Adam, who they named Adam because Lamau, of course they named him Adam. He's like going to be the first, like,
yeah, because they boy. Were like, oh, humanity has been destroyed for the most part. Like, it's, you know, it's the rebirth.
The rebirth. Because these fuckers think that a plane that crashed into their home was a bomb.
Was a nuclear fucking bomb.
It wasn't. This was all during the Cuban Missile Crisis, by the way. So they really did think that there was a nuclear bomb.
I mean, fair assumption, because when the crash happens, it triggers all the locks that are on the shelter. And he installed, Christopher Walken installed locks because he knows, you know, their human nature is going to get the better of them. They're not going to want to stay in the shelter for 35 years, which is the half-life of radiation. And so they know that if they were to go to the surface pre 35 years, they would get radiation poisoning and be fucked.
And die, basically.
Exactly. So he has these locks. And then as soon as Adam turns 35, everything unlocks.
And it opens.
And it coincides with Christopher Walken getting some sort of mysterious illness.
I know. He like gets, you assume that it's like a heart attack or like a heart problem, panic attack.
But
I
then
don't
he just ends up being fine.
I don't know.
Without any medical attention. It's very strange.
That's not the point. The point is that they live fucking underground.
For 35 years.
Like worms for 35 fucking years. And much like you would think about a man who spent his entire life with only his parents.
Mm-hmm.
The man is like a man child.
Yeah, he's a man child who's only, he only has knowledge of shit from the 1950s and 60s because that's all that there was.
That's all that he knows.
They had old taped television shows from like the 50s and 60s that they had brought down with them. So that's all of his exposure to pop culture. Everything he says, he speaks in like that kind of old timey vernacular.
He's like, whoa, that's really swell.
He's like, ah, gee, you know?
By gosh, by golly.
And so, but he also like has the natural inclinations to like want to fall in love and
like
want to
like,
meet a woman
like
and,
bone. I don't know.
Exactly. And so when they figure out that like he's going to have to go up to the surface, that's one of his intentions, to like find a woman. And it's so funny because Sissy's basic is telling him like what to look for in a woman. Mm-hmm. And she's like, and you should get a nice girl from Pasadena. Girls from the valley are fine, but I just always found that girls from Pasadena were a little bit nicer.
Which, okay,
as
so
two girls from the valley,
just that's true. But I'm just kidding. First of all, they live in a house in the valley.
It's in Hollywood.
Is it in Hollywood?
Yeah, because they say that, I think it's like Studio City-ish going into the Hollywood area, but yeah.
But it's like, it's the valley.
Sure.
And they live there, and there, which means that their bunker is underneath there. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine what happens when they get to the 90s, by the way, which is when this like all sort of plays out. When they get to the 90s, and they, to them, the world has gone to shit. Because obviously when you have like 1950s ideals, when Christopher Walken, because he's like the head of the family, he like, you know, because again, 1950s, he goes up to the surface and he is shocked. Yeah. They're underneath like a bar tavern place.
That's one of the things that I think is so funny about the movie, is because they show you that like after the plane hits the house, they take away all the wreckage and they don't realize that something, that like there's a bunker underneath.
Well,
they
think it's a septic tank, and like obviously they don't want to fucking open it because it's a septic tank.
Yeah, so they're like, okay, we'll just leave it here. And then they build a diner on top of it. And in the 60s, you see it's like a soda shop. And it's like all cute and cheery, and it's owned by like a mom and her son.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see in the next decade, it's kind of like a flower power place. And then in the 80s, it starts getting like a kind
really
of like
seedy.
Yeah. And then in the 90s, it's like a scary punk.
A terrible place.
It's really fucking awful.
But there's like adult bookstores everywhere. Like, I don't know why, but in like every block, there's like a porn shop. Yeah. I do not know why. I mean, maybe because they like, it's the whole,
if it's on Ventura Boulevard, it makes sense.
If it's in the valley, I guess that makes sense. But the reality is that Christopher Walken's character goes up to the surface and is like appalled.
Yeah.
By everything that he sees. Like, and he makes these terrible comments that would never be okay
no.
in the 90s. It would never be okay now. It would just not be okay. Like, he he meets a I believe a trans sex worker. Yeah, he meets a trans sex worker who is, I think she's black.
Yes,
he meets a black trans sex worker as a man from the 1950s.
Yeah.
So if you can imagine how that scenario sort of plays out, it plays out exactly the way you think it would. He runs away. He's like, oh my God. Like, he fucking runs away. He runs down into his bunker and he tells his wife and obviously makes his son plug his ears and hum so he doesn't hear about this awful thing where he goes, you know, he thinks that the radiation has mutated humans. Can you believe? Like, he thinks
they're mutants.
He's like, they're mutants. They're like, you know, they're multisexual is what he says. He's like they're women, they're men, they're, I don't even know. He's like, he's like, there's mutants up there. And his wife is just like, oh, what? No.
Like, and then he's like, we can't go back up.
And she's like, okay, yeah, let's
no,
send her.
No, she freaks out, remember?
Yeah. Oh, yes, he says, oh my God, this bitch freaks the fuck out.
She's like, we are not staying down here. Fuck you. Absolutely not.
So then she goes up and realizes that it's just not, she definitely doesn't want to be up there. Mm-hmm. So she sends her son because the father gets very ill again for an undisclosed reason.
Yeah.
So they send Adam up there because he's the strong boy and he's going to bring back the X, you know, whatever, I guess like a decade, 2 years, like however long it was.
Like 3 years worth of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Because they're going to apparently like wait it out down there until like the mutants. I don't even fucking know. It's just so bizarre. But while he's up there, he has these like baseball cards that are obviously worth thousands of dollars because again, he is from the 50s.
60s.
The 60s. And so they were his dad's baseball cards.
Well, yeah.
So these are like, these might even be like 30s baseball cards.
Sure.
Like, they're really fucking old.
Yeah.
So he takes the baseball cards and he like wants to sell them in order to get more money because A, of course, everything costs more. B, they didn't anticipate buying like more shit. Like they thought that everything would be a fucking wasteland and money would no longer be like a thing.
Yeah. Because when Sissy Spacek is like coaching him to go to the surface, she's like, you're going to look for something called what used to be called a grocery store.
It's like, of course there are still fucking grocery stores. Like nothing happened, y'all.
But they have no idea.
But they have no idea. So he like rents all these trucks to like go to these grocery stores to pick everything up. And in order for him to get more money, he has to sell his baseball cards. So he goes into this like really seedy ass shop where he meets the one and only Alicia Silverstone.
Yes.
And she is so good in this movie.
She's so funny.
She's hilarious. She plays like a like fucking fed up as shit woman who's like really into baseball cards.
Her name is Eve.
Yeah. Ha, 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 ha. Adam and Eve. But she like, you know, she has all these fucking baseball cards and like she's like, yeah, I guess I'll drive you for like a baseball card. But then her better nature is like, no, like you have to go back to him and like give him back the baseball card because like
it's not fair. It's not I can't fair. Take this from him. It's worth so much money. Yeah.
Long story short,
he hires her to help him get like all of the supplies and then, you know, love follows.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know like that. She doesn't know his situation. Because his mom told him, just say that you're from out of town and you're here on business.
Which is such a 50s thing to say.
Exactly. And she's like, and you're going to try and look for a place called the Holiday Inn. So he stays at a Holiday Inn. It's really fucking cute. But then he like hangs out with Eve and hangs out with her friends and he goes dancing, which they filmed at fucking Union Station. This film had a $35 million budget.
Bizarre.
Insanity.
Bizarre.
And they rented out Union fucking Station in Los Angeles for a nightclub scene.
A single nightclub scene.
First Griffith Park in Earth Girls Are Easy. Or now, Griffith Observatory, and now fucking Union Station.
I can't with Hollywood and their need to turn things that are not nightclubs into nightclubs.
Honestly. But like, Brendan Fraser in this movie, like we've been saying, he plays the wide-eyed, naive guy so well. But you would think that, like, you would find elements of that, like, disingenuous or fake or something like that. Eve certainly does. She's like, I don't buy this guy. Mm. He's weird. Because she's not used to nice guys. She's like that girl who's never met a nice boy.
She's only with bad boys who are hunky and cute.
Her ex-boyfriend is played by a beautiful cameo by Nathan Fillion.
I know, which I just find so amazing. Like, of course it's Nathan fucking Fillion.
Exactly. But Brendan Fraser, just like, he does come at it from such a genuine place. And you never fucking question him. And
not this movie once
is so fucking wackadoodle. You would think that you would find it at least a little fake, and you don't.
Or like nauseating almost. Like you think, yeah, like, oh, the premise combined with everything that goes on, combined with like the situations, mm-hmm, combined with just the fact that of course it's the fucking 1950s.
Yeah.
In the 90s world, you would believe that it was that it would fucking make you vomit in your mouth.
Yeah.
It does not. And the reason being is because Brendan Fraser gives you an authentic portrayal of someone in that exact situation. He's not pretending, mm-hmm, right? So he's not like he's not like overacting it. He's not giving it too much gas.
Yeah.
He's giving it just the right amount of gas, and he's letting you cruise along with him. And I very, very, very much appreciate that, because I thought, as it sort of went on, mm-hmm, I thought I was going to sort of get sick of it. The number one reason why I didn't is because of his performance.
Yeah.
Is because I fully believed every word of his that was coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
100%.
Because he's just a guy. He like really loves his parents. He really cares about them. He just wants to like do what's right. He wants to treat Alicia Silverstone right and wants to like do right by her. And he doesn't recognize like the literal wealth that he has, because you find out later he also has all of these like super old stocks
that are like now worth millions of
literally
dollars.
Literally millions. So it's nice, because the end of the movie is that they cash in on all the baseball cards and all the stocks, and they're able to buy to build yet another exact replica of the original home.
Because in this movie, only replicas of homes exist. That's it.
Well, he wants his parents to be comfortable, because I mean, it's gonna be really fucking shocking for them when they realize that there was no bomb and that
nothing
they missed
happened
out on 35 years of the world,
which is just something very difficult to reckon with.
Oh, that would be a traumatic experience.
But for some reason, for Christopher Walken's character, when he finds out, he just goes, ah, oh, damn, don't tell your mother. And then proceeds to measure out the field in which they are in to build yet another bomb shelter for the future. The yeah. man is like 90.
It's pretty,
like,
it's pretty fucking hilarious.
What the fuck?
But yeah, I just like this movie is just, it's very sweet. It's very genuine. The plot is like really fun and incredibly original. And, you know, it's another LA porn movie. You see so many good sights. It's a personal fave of mine.
It's very, very good. I wish that they would remake it for today's world.
Yeah, that would be kind of fun.
I'm itching to know what that would look like.
Brendan Fraser should star in it.
100%. Like, Brendan Fraser now.
Yep.
But yeah, that's
Brendan, you guys.
That was Blast from the Past, and that was Brendan.
We love him. I encourage you to watch his movies. There are some duds.
There are some doozies.
For sure.
Yes.
We tried watching George of the Jungle.
It didn't work out.
It's a bad movie.
He's really good in it.
He's very funny, but like to the point where that's all I can say. I can just say he's funny, and that's it.
And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. But he deserves your attention.
Yeah. We're excited to see what he does next. Mm-hmm. And we're excited for the world to open up its arms and give him more opportunities to make his true comeback.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Get him off of Doom Patrol and get him into an Oscar film, an Oscar contender.
Exactly. So, Monica, what have you dabbled in?
Well, as I said earlier, mm-hmm, I have a chicken. And I've been dabbling in him.
Monica's been dabbling inside of the chicken Outside of the chicken.
Around the chicken. I'm all chicken all the time.
All the time, baby.
Today. So that's what I've been dabbling in. A roast chicken. A spatchcocked chicken.
In case we haven't said that already, the word is spatchcocked.
What about you, Yesica?
I'm just trying to find shit to, you know, fill my time, honestly.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not even entertained enough by like playing my Nintendo Switch anymore. I used to play The Sims for hours, and that's not doing it anymore. So I'm trying to take up a little bit more reading, some more hobbies.
That's nice.
I ordered a Kindle, which never owned.
Welcome
it will come in October because they're all out of stock.
Of course. No, of course they are.
Exactly. So I'm ordering a Kindle because I'm also finding that I'm in a place where like I am trying to force myself to read a lot of like, you know, smart person novels.
Like what?
Like, I don't know, like really acclaimed shit that I haven't read yet.
Realizing
that like it's just not the time for me.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like,
and
why?
All I wanna do is read like the YA novels that I used to read.
Yeah, read Meg Cabot.
Exactly, which is why I bought a Kindle, because I don't wanna spend money on all of those books in paperback because they're more expensive. I would rather spend like $3.99 on them.
Amazing.
But yeah, so I purchased a Kindle. I'm thinking of taking up crocheting. I used to know how to do it as a child.
Amazing.
And so now I want to take it up again. Yeah, but besides that, I'm just, you know, hanging out with my cat, trying to train her not to fucking eat everything.
Mona. Named after me.
She was not, but it's fine. Don't tell me. So now we have a daddy story for this week.
And today, Jessica's going to read it.
I'm going to read it.
Also from our same listener, Courtney, shout out.
She's apparently met more than one daddy.
Which is kind of wild. But anyway, if you guys have met any daddies, please send us your daddy stories. You can DM us on Instagram at John Favreau is my daddy, or you can email us at hello@johnfavreauismydaddy.com.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. I'm going to read it verbatim as it was sent to us. It starts, I am not the biggest basketball stan, but it was senior year of college and the last Northwestern B-ball game of the season, so I went with my roommate, who was very committed to all basketball and football games. We were at school the same time as Julia Louis-Dreyfus' son, and he played on the basketball team. Now, I knew from JLD's Instagram that she loved to come to the basketball games when she wasn't filming Veep, and I had heard stories of people running into her at the games. Let me interject right here and just say that JLD is legitimately one of my idols. Like, she's tops in comedy and also just being an amazing woman. So, my roommate and I are walking from my car to the arena. It's freezing, by the way, because Chicago winters are things of true nightmare. And I had the thought, I wonder if JLD will be at this game. I know they just wrapped filming this season of Veep. Yes, I know that sounds stalkery, but it was the thought process. We make it into the arena and grab our spots in the student section, and I swear to God, a beam of light shone down across the arena, and there sat JLD and her husband, who is also sexy and a certifiable daddy. So I asked my roommate if I should go say hi, because when else will I get the chance to interface with a true legend? And my roommate was like, IDK, I guess. So I spent the whole first half of the game wondering if I should say hi, if she would be mad, if I would turn into a whole thing, etc. Because I really didn't want to ruin her night, but I also wanted to meet her. So I decided to casually saunter over during halftime, quickly say hi, not ask for a picture, etc., to try to keep it discreet. Halftime comes and my heart is racing. I'm so nervous, but I managed to make it over to where she was sitting. I tapped her hot husband on the shoulder, and like a true gem, he turned to me with a smile. I said, could I possibly say hi to her? As I pointed to JLD, and he said, of course, and turned to her and said, honey, she'd like to say hi. And then with her winning ass smile, all caps, she turns to me and extends her hand. I take it and shake it and say, hi, I just wanted to say that as an aspiring actress and comedian, I just really respect your work and really look up to you and all you've done, and I just wanted to thank you. And this was obviously not the first time someone has given her this monologue, and she just smiled and looked touched and said, thank you, to which I replied like an idiot, no, thank you, and then walked away with my armpits dripping sweat. It was totally worth it, though.
Wow. I don't think I would say hi to JLD. I wouldn't say hi to Julia.
I won't say
Julia
hi
Lee
to
Jarvis.
Fucking anybody.
I just can't. Only because, like, I specifically Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she is like untouchable to me.
Yeah.
She can do no wrong. She has like her personal journey is also, I mean, go look it up. She's like battled cancer and like she's, mm-hmm. she fucking went to fucking Veep like yeah, during chemo. Like she's just a fucking badass. So, and Veep is one of my all time like favorite shows. It's so fucking good. I've seen the entire series like 3 times. Once in the beginning of quarantine with my hub. Wow. But I think specifically her, mm-hmm. I would not want to meet. Simply because, you know the saying, like, don't meet your heroes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys?
That was BF. Our BF. Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser. Send us your daddy stories. Send us questions. Ask us for film recommendations. Tell us what the fuck daddy you want us to do, even though Monica and I will probably just do what we want anyway.
Listen, enough of you wanted Jeff Goldblum that we made it happen.
Exactly.
So if you feel like you have a specific one, just fucking DM us already. Don't keep it in. Let it out. It's always better out than in.
You can even text us. Most of you know us personally.
I was going to say most of our listeners. Hi, Dad.
Hello, my friends.
Hello, friends.
But yeah, send us shit. We want to read it. We want to talk about it because we like doing this. So as always, Monica,
don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Please.
We'll see you next Tuesday.
See ya. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Love you.
Love you.
Farewell. Bye.